Blog Talk Radio.
This podcast is brought to you by PEMCO Capital Management. PEMCO Capital Management provides an institutional platform for accredited investors to gain exposure in niche sectors within the distressed residential mortgage and real estate markets. Visit PEMCO Capital Management on the web at www.pemco-capital.com. Now your host of Capital Markets Today, Louis Amaya.
Thank you for joining Capital Markets Today. My name is Louis Amaya. Back in July, Redfin paid $610,000 for a two-bedroom single-family home in Las Vegas. And a few weeks later, it put it back onto the market for close to $674,000. However, Las Vegas quickly went into a home price correction, and the property currently remains unsold with a list price of $499,000, 18% below the acquisition value. As a result of the nationwide decline in values, Redfin recently announced it's shutting down its algorithm-run iBuyer business. As the market changes direction, how can real estate investors protect or hedge the downside of their real estate portfolio? Joining the podcast today to discuss hedging real estate values is John Dolan with Home Price Futures. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
Before we get started, why don't you explain a little bit about your firm and the role at your firm?
So my firm is me. I have been making markets in these contracts for the last 10 years to kind of pick up on a history of having worked on Wall Street for the 30 or 40 years before that, both as a dealer and as an investor, and coming to see that there really wasn't any product after the financial crisis that allowed users to hedge home price exposure. So I got into this back around 2010 and have stayed with it since.
Excellent. And were you familiar with the RPX index that traded about 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, there's been a variety of attempts to launch other products because there's certainly a need for it. I traded RPX for, I think it was alive for about a year or so. I've also traded the Paris home price futures contract and have worked with other countries to try and have them brainstorm on the issues involved in putting together a futures contract.
Can you explain the typical buyer or seller profile of someone who is using the index?
So the seller profile is a little easier because there have been so few trades that small contracts trade consistent with individuals using them. So I've had homeowners looking to hedge gains in the prices that have risen so much over the last 7 to 8 years. I've had home flippers, people who really can't take the exposure of a home price decline of 20% or so, and even construction companies who have gone through the process of putting up houses with the idea of selling them in 12 to 18 months, all of whom have dealt with the futures on the sales side before. The buy side has been a little bit more challenging because the two natural entities for buying are people who don't have homes, and these are typically either renters or millennials, and they don't have the means to buy a home, or institutions. Several institutions have expressed a view that home prices are a great hedge against inflation, but they need to see hundreds of contracts trade before they get involved. So that's the kinds of people who both really and theoretically have been on the buy and sell side.
Interesting. So if someone's a renter who can't get into the housing market but wants to take part in home price appreciation, they become a buyer. And if you are someone who holds a real estate portfolio in a market of declining values, you would become a seller. Would that be correct?
That would be correct. So my approach to this is if you own one house, you're neutral. You don't care if home prices go up or down because if you sell that house, you have to buy another. And you don't care about rents because you've got a place to live. So people who own less than one or more than one would be the marginal buyer or seller. And to your question about the renter, there's been a whole change in wealth distribution in the country between those that own homes and those that don't. And ideally, a home price exposure can be done in a bite-sized piece. Each contract has a notional of $70,000 or $80,000. And that way, people who even decide to rent, whether that's because of economics or because they need the job flexibility, can have some exposure to the upside to home prices.
We're using the index to hedge against downside exposure on our real estate portfolio, or at least a portion of it. But getting the information out there that you can participate in home price appreciation if you can't afford to buy a house, that's pretty powerful. I mean, for example, in California, you know, since the last crash and people having to sell homes, there's been tons of people that have lost out on the wealth generation that comes from owning homes in the last 10 years. And a tool like this would have been a really good way for them to at least participate in some format.
Right. So you get the exposure to home prices, good or bad, up or down. And to the extent you got in 2015, you would have been able to ride the home price appreciation up for whatever your exposure was. And for hedgers who had the foresight to hedge in spring or summer, early summer this year, they were able to hedge against a portion of their portfolio as prices fell.
So can you explain the buy-sell process and how someone would participate in the index?
Sure. So I'm going to limit my comments to the futures contract. There are other over-the-counter ways that one could gain exposure in other areas. But as to a futures contract, you need to have an FCM, a futures commodity merchant, a brokerage account where you would be open not only to trade futures but to trade these specific futures. And they will do the typical vetting process to make sure that it's suitable for you to trade, that they know their customer, that they deal with all the anti-money laundering laws and things like that. And the process takes a couple of days. And so once you have the account open, you're able to buy or sell either by putting bids in or offers in or by acting on a bid or an offer in the market. And some people choose to do that through their broker, in which case one type of broker makes sense. And some people choose to do that electronically, in which case another type of broker might make sense.
So if someone was buying a home today and may feel like there may be some home price value decline over the next 2 years, is it too late for them to hedge on that because the futures contracts are already pricing that price point in? Or is it still make sense for them to take a position? Because ultimately, right, if on a hedge, you're looking to come out flat in base case scenario.
So, you know, rule number one is I don't offer financial advice, so I'm not going to tell them what they should do. But I would say that there have been times in the past where if they're buying something today, the futures market reflects some element of expectations as to where prices are going. So in past years, if the price today was 100, the price a year from now would be 108, and the price 2 years from now would be 116. So someone could hedge at that 108 or 116 dollar price and lock in some of the gains. Unfortunately, for someone in the situation you're describing today, the forward prices are lower than today. So they would be selling at a price lower than today's prices. That is, the world generally expects home prices to go down, so no surprise, the futures prices reflect that. Turning the table around to find the glass half full element of it, that's the opportunity possibly for the buyers today. People can buy home price exposure a year or two from now at levels that existed in some indices only before COVID. So, and going back to your original premise, sorry for running on here, it may or may not make sense for that person who's buying a house to limit their downside, but that's going to depend on each person's perspective on risk and what their discussions with their broker.
So if someone, and I'm going to ask these questions myself, and my audience are in the distressed asset acquisition business, either buying non-performing mortgage loans or distressed real estate. When we bid, we generally bid in our expectations of a home price index. So, for example, if it is, we feel like, yeah, it's going to drop 15 points over a two-year period, which if we're buying mortgage loans, it may take that long to move through the foreclosure process, get the real estate, and then sell the real estate. You know, we'll bid in a 15-point decline annualized for the timeline we're holding it. The thought would be if, okay, we're bidding in 15 points, but as a base case, what if the market drops 25 points, which the reason I'm giving the scenario is because that's exactly what happened 2006, 2007 with a lot of investors. You know, we thought it was going to go down 25-30% and it went down 45-50%. It would make sense at that point for someone to say, okay, I'm going to bid 15 points down, but I may hedge that position in the event it drops 25 points. Does that type of scenario make sense?
Sure. So I have kind of two reactions to it. One is bidding at 15-point discounts makes sense when you have a flat or rising market. And a lot of the iBuyers made money doing that. A lot of the home flippers made money doing that. But when sentiment turns so negative, maybe you need an even bigger discount to decide where to buy at today's levels, because the contracts for a year and a half from now clear at 15% below today's levels. So it's kind of you're buying, if your holding period is a year and a half, you're buying where prices are already going to be. However, having said that, the futures clear where buyers and sellers are willing to exchange risk. And if you want protection against what that level is, thinking that it might go down further, then being short futures is a way to protect yourself if you have that view.
Okay. And being short futures would be purchasing a futures contract at the price that it's, you know, currently shows that it would trade at or sell for.
No, you'd be a seller. So if you're buying a futures contract, you're gaining exposure to the index, and your result will be one for one with markets moving up and down. If you're selling a futures contract, then your exposure will also be one for one, but you'll profit one for one as the settlement price is lower. So if you want exposure to any commodity, including home prices, people consider buying the futures contract, and if you want to sell that exposure, you sell the futures contract.
Got it. And so shorting would be which one of those two functions?
Shorting would be selling.
Selling. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. I think I just worded it, didn't word it correctly. What activity are you seeing today in the different indexes? And is, I'm assuming, the 20 city index is the most liquid, but for example, in California, you know, LA is an interesting scenario in that we're seeing, you know, bubbles in certain areas. Is anybody taking the other side on a short right now in those types of markets?
So again, the short and long, let's reverse them. What I had heard or had a lot of inquiries over the last 3 months are from people in the area in California, let's say, where they bought the house and it has doubled in price in the last 8 years for round numbers. And they were worried about it going down 5, 10, 15, even 20%. And so they would approach me saying, where can I sell some number of contracts? And recall that the notional value of a contract is the price times the $250. So if a contract's trading at $300, that's $75,000 of notional exposure. So I would get inquiries from people saying I want to sell 5, 10, 15 contracts because I bought the house so long ago, I don't know what's going to happen, but I want to kind of take some chips off the table. And that was particularly the case in the L.A., San Francisco, and San Diego markets, which are three of the 10 cities in the benchmark intensity index contract.
Okay. And so, and is that activity still going on right now? I mean, or was that mostly in an increasing market?
So most activity in the contracts comes when there's a change of opinion or where there's a mix of opinions. If everybody thinks the market's going up or everybody thinks the market's going down, then it tends to be quiet. But during those transition periods where some think it's not going to go down so much or some think it's still going to go up, then there's more activity. So there's more activity in of that thinking process in May, June, July, because some people were like, well, you know, how high could the Fed raise rates? 3%, 4%, 5%? Now things have kind of ground to a much quieter level because the activity with Fed funds has kind of scared away so many people, and there's been a lot of time for the researchers to kind of map out their stories. And I think that there's pretty much of a consensus that home prices are going to fall during 2023. So the buyers are taking very much a wait and see how bad things get. I may have one or two bottom fishers, but we're not going to have I don't expect to have a wave of buyers coming in anytime soon unless the Fed says we're not going to tighten anymore.
And there's other users of this index that actually just trade for trading's sake, right? They're not necessarily shorting or buying. They're just in the market to, I guess, make money off the index. Are those the people that you're saying may be sitting on the sideline right now?
No, I think when I described who the buying community would be, there's both types, whether it's a millennial who's saying, yeah, I still want to buy a house in San Diego and I want to have some exposure to the San Diego market, but I don't know enough to say this is the bottom or that's the bottom. So they're waiting for confirmation of the bottom. And then more importantly, on the institutional side, the institutions, as you've seen in the markets over the last couple of months, have been shedding exposure. I expect that at some point, someone's going to put their hand up and say, you're right, buying home prices for 2024 delivery at 2019 prices makes all kinds of sense, but they're not ready to do that yet, and they also need to overcome this chicken and egg related to volume. So it's pretty much wait and see until people get comfortable that the prices have hit bottom.
So someone to looking to maybe hedge a real estate portfolio today, they may not be able to do it to the extent of the volume that they may want to do it.
Correct.
Got it. And what's the network that you currently work with in? I mean, who your typical client is someone who's trying to hedge a one-off piece of real estate, or I know we've talked several times and, you know, we buy in bulk and it's difficult to manage or to hedge a sizable amount of real estate simply because of the lack of counterparties.
So your use of counterparty makes me want to interject one thing, that the benefit of the futures market is that whoever you're dealing with, the CME in this case, is your counterparty on the trade. So people, users, shouldn't have any concern about who's on the other side of the trade. And as it relates to clearing a sufficiently large amount, I post prices that are one lot bid, one lot offer, just to give people an idea of where clearing levels might be. I would bid for larger size, but it would be at a discount to those prices, and most people, I think, are looking to trade at least at the stated bid or offer as they would in a stock market trade. I'm not sure if I answered your question directly, but those are two thoughts I wanted to convey.
And so if someone is purchasing, say you were on the flip side of buying a real estate portfolio and you have certain expectations, the market's going to move a certain direction, and you're bidding that in, you're bidding that price decline in, is there anything else you would do to protect the downside of your acquisition?
Well, that's one of the problems. There doesn't seem to be too many products available in the system for people to hedge against that. So you have a lot of people trying to put on shadow products. So if they're worried about San Francisco home prices, they'll short tech stocks. If they're worried about Vegas, they'll short casino stocks. But there are a few highly correlated opportunities for hedging real estate exposure. Having said that, I would say that this area is attracting a lot of interest to include from the tech community. And the idea, I would expect that you'll see in the next year or two, digital coins, where the coin itself is the value of San Diego, San Francisco, or LA properties or some index. And my hope is that I'm trying to encourage that, because my hope is that that will increase the pie and lead to many, many more discussions about where home prices are headed.
So that's interesting. Can you explain a little bit how that would work?
So there's a couple approaches. One is that people can create coins to do whatever, take any exposure you want. There are other situations where people are trying to say there's all this volume of home price exposure that's out there, whether it's the equity in your home or a portfolio of loans or things like that. And in pledging these, you basically have the person who has the long exposure and they want to reduce that exposure. Can you find somebody who and you have a critical mass of it? This addresses the institutional question. If you have a critical mass of this exposure that wants to be risked, can you get the word out to institutional investors and put it into a format that an institutional investor might want? So, A, you have the volume, and B, if you could put that into either a coin or an ETF or something else that they have a home for, then maybe there'll be more transactions. So people are working on both angles.
And that's fascinating. I'm just not that familiar with the coin aspect, and even hedging, it's a little bit different than our normal real estate and mortgage loan transactions. So excuse me for my elementary questions, but if someone wanted to reach out to you and have these discussions, is there a way that they can get a hold of you?
So they're happy to contact me via the website, homepricefutures.com. I try and keep a lot of information there that may be of use to people. And there's certainly a contact button that people can use to send me their questions. I'm looking to try and solve problems. So tell me your problem. Tell me the exposure you're trying to hedge. Tell me the time frame, and then we can brainstorm as to how that might work. And believe me, it's easier probably to come up with a solution for $10 million of exposure than it is to come up with a $1 million exposure, because the $1 million exposure, I'm likely to be the other side of the trade and I only have so much capacity, whereas 10 or 20 million, now we can start going to institutions and saying, hey, look, here's a critical mass, this makes sense, willing buyer, willing seller, we just have to agree on structure and price.
Excellent. Well, this is fascinating information. I'm still learning a lot myself, and so I'm sure we'll be talking more. What you just mentioned about scaling up is something that we're looking into and making a permanent part of our acquisition strategy. But at any rate, I know you're super busy. I appreciate your time. Just one question: any thoughts from you personally on how the housing market is going to move over the next 12 to 18 months? And if you think there's any bubbles in specific areas?
I try and focus more on the format for allowing people to exchange risk, because there's literally dozens of firms. I was on three webinars today listening to people who had opinions on where home prices might go. I think some of the general rules that I take to heart are the things that got bid up the most, possibly in a speculative flurry, are the ones that are most vulnerable, the Boises, the Austins of the world, in the short run. But the things that made these cities attractive to people moving from California are still there, and I think that they will do just fine in the long run, but there will be some short-term hiccups as the new buyers face 7% mortgages, and the supply that wasn't there in 2020 is now coming on board. So think of it in terms of a parallel to the stock market. You have some cities that are high beta cities. Boise and Austin would be two of them. San Francisco's long been one of them. And you have some that are low beta cities. They just don't go up all that much, and they just don't go down all that much. And Rochester, Cleveland, and Chicago might be in the latter category.
Got
so you
it.
Tell me which way home prices are going, and I'll tell you who – I'll pick the high beta to get you your winners and losers.
Yeah, that's excellent. It's a paradigm shift on how some of us real estate mortgage-related investors are thinking about how to trade within this space. So, again, thanks so much for joining. I really appreciate it, and I would definitely encourage all my listeners to reach out to you and get some more information on this, as it's extremely valuable. Thanks so much, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. That's it for this podcast of Capital Markets Today. Please take a look at our website, capital-mt.com, for data and specific news related to real estate and mortgage. And thanks again for joining, and we'll talk next time.
This has been a production of Capital Markets Today, a leading aggregator of news, tweets, and podcasts for mortgage, real estate, and capital market industries. You can subscribe to the Capital Markets Today podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Libsyn, and other major podcast distributors. Go to www.capital-mt.com for more information and to subscribe to our daily newsletter. Find out why we have over 50,000 subscribers worldwide.